Well, we're continuing our topical series, and tonight I want to talk about defending the faith. This is an important topic that we need to constantly be reminded of and be practiced in. Now, the unbeliever claims that it's possible to separate faith and reason. You'll often see them arguing in this way, separating faith from reason. The unbeliever says that reason can stand on its own and function independently of any faith commitment. And therefore, he believes he's able to use reason to discover and establish ultimate truth. I can find ultimate truth just by using reason alone. It is through reason that people determine what is, that is, what exists. They determine what is possible, as well as what's good and bad. All that's needed is reason, and we can arrive at all the answers we need. Now, the person who claims these ideas as his own has made reason his ultimate source of authority. But did he reason his way to this conclusion? Did he reason his way there? To the position of believing that reason could serve as his ultimate authority. Upon what basis does he know that reason is the ultimate authority in determining or discovering reality about everything? He certainly didn't reason his way to that position, but rather he embraced it by faith. We'll get into that a bit more. He asserted by an act of faith that all he needs to arrive at true knowledge is his reason. That's a faith commitment. The atheist claims that his explanation of life and existence is reasonable. It's based upon the use of reason, whereas the Christian's explanation of things is merely relying upon faith. So the atheist pits reason against faith. He separates them, and then he demeans faith as something inferior, and he pummels faith with his reason. So when someone pits faith against reason, don't be intimidated. You're making fun. Oh, you got faith. I've got reason. I've got science. I've got facts. I got rational steps that I can show you. All you've got is this faith appeal. We mustn't be intimidated when somebody confronts us like that, because you can't separate faith and reason. So that's your starting point. You know that. You know he's trying to do it, but you know it cannot be done. Thus, how do you proceed in the discussion? What's your step? What's your objective? What are you going to try and do? You need to show him his faith commitment. He's denying he's got one. Now you've got to show him his faith commitment. You're not merely going to say to him, you have faith commitment. You're going to demonstrate to him his faith commitment. You show it to him. This is where you are holding by faith, which requires some thought as how best to do that. Now, if you're proud or arrogant, then your discussion will take the form of exalting yourself. Debate at that point becomes a competition. It's about winning. I'm going to win. I'm going to show him. That's not what it's about. Rather than compassionately reaching out to a lost sinner. So if we get angry with the sinner's arrogance or his foolishness or his willful blindness, then what we're doing is we're coming alongside him and standing with him against God. We're both sinning at that point. So we want to stay calm, we want to stay cool, and in that way our faculties function better. We can be much more deliberate in what we're thinking. We can follow his argument and find the holes in it. So if we remain calm and confident, not arrogant, but an internal confidence, because we know he's made a fundamental blunder. It's like, for us it would be like, you know, Bobby Fischer watching his opponent, he was the chess master, making a move, and actually his whole body relaxing, realizing I've won this game, and there's 25 moves away till the end of the game. But he realized when the guy did that move, the game was over. And once he's tried to separate faith and reason, you know, hey, the game's over. So you want internal confidence, knowing that despite all the different details that he could fling out on the table to try and discuss them, the essence of the debate is about opposing presuppositions, faith commitments to things you embrace before you even begin your thinking. Opposing starting points, that's where the debate is, that each person rationally embraces by faith. We all have starting points where we begin our thinking from. And they're rationally understood, but they're embraced by faith. They're not arrived at through the process of reasoning toward them. We start there. And so those are our presuppositions. Thus, this is where your attention is to be directed, at his presuppositions, his starting place. You need to identify his starting place, his ultimate authority, and then critique it to see whether it is able to do what he claims it can do. You see, he claims by reason I can solve everything. By reason I can accomplish anything. By reason I can answer every question. I can explain every circumstance by my reason. You say, okay, we're going to critique that. Once I've shown you that that's a faith commitment, we're then going to critique that and see if it's able to do what you claim it can do. So you're basically going to hold his feet to the fire on that. Before anyone begins thinking about anything, they by faith presuppose certain things to be true and possible, and then these presuppositions direct and determine how they think about everything. So everyone does this, and so whether you are speaking to a cult member or you're speaking to someone who claims to be irreligious, your focus remains exactly the same. Identify their starting point, their faith commitment, which will be their ultimate authority, and then critique it to see if it can do what the person claims. You see, many Christians think that the unbeliever is merely missing some information about God, and that they, the Christian, is now bringing to them. Oh, they didn't understand this before. They lack a full picture of what the situation was. So the unbeliever's problem is merely a lack of information. It's not a lack of information. In reality, the unbeliever has more information than he wants. And he's engaged in the battle to suppress that and try and hold it down so he can escape from the information he already has. He's in a desperate effort to suppress the truth. He is in self-conscious rebellion against God. And the presuppositions that he has embraced by faith and by which he understands all things, the presuppositions he's holding to, are part of his attempt to suppress God's truth. A truth that he both knows and hates. Okay, so that's, when you're speaking to him, you've got to realize this is where he's at. And that's going to shape how you approach him. That's going to shape how you can best undermine his position, or at least show him his foolish rebellion. Do you see how important it is that we correctly answer the question about unbelief, what it actually is? Because our answer to this will determine how we will speak to the unbeliever and how we will go about defending the truth that he's attacking. He's going to be attacking my position, and how am I going to defend that to him? I've got to understand where he's coming from. Until believers appreciate what is really going on in the person who doesn't believe, their evangelism and their apologetics will be defective. Apologetics has to do with the defense of the faith. The defense of the faith in the face of error. However, not every attempt by Christians to defend the faith is consistent with the truth that God has revealed. There's a lot of Christian apologetic systems that are inconsistent to the truth that God has revealed. This doesn't mean God doesn't use them. God can beat a straight path with a crooked stick, and he often does. So it doesn't mean he won't use these different apologists who've suggested different ways of defending the faith. But believers should desire to faithfully represent their Lord in all that they do, which includes how they are to think about everything, how they are to think about apologetics, how they are to think about defending the truth that God has revealed. To my mind, lots of apologetic methods are comparable to a law enforcement agency that is trying to disarm criminals while also giving them weapons at the same time. The apologetic method is doing that. It's taking something away, but it's also giving something back. They're trying to get the unbeliever to surrender to the Lord of the universe and trust in his word alone, but at the same time they're assuring the unbeliever that he is able to interpret facts independently of God and arrive at the truth about those facts without bowing to God's explanation. Well, let's just look at the evidence. Let's see if there's a possibility that a God exists somewhere. These apologetic methods are, on the one hand, demanding that the unbeliever give up his autonomy and to trust completely in God's word. But on the other hand, they're saying that it's fine for the unbeliever to hang on to his autonomy in certain areas of life or when discussing certain topics. There you can trust fully on your logic, on your reasoning ability to arrive at the truth. And you can bypass God, really. I mean, we don't even have to open the Bible, in a sense, and you can arrive at true truth. So you can use your mind in those areas and be autonomous, but when it comes to this area, now you've got to bow. But we have to ask, in which area of life is the natural man able to discover truth on his own? Are there any areas? Every fact that exists, that God has created, every fact that exists in this universe, including man's reasoning ability, his intellect, his mind, All of these have been created by God and can only be understood correctly in its relationship to God and in the light of his purpose for it. Otherwise you don't fully understand what this is. So what is cannot be separated from why is it? So what is it can't be separated from why is it? Those two are connected. And the unbeliever who's rejecting God is suppressing the truth about why it is. Many Christians rest the apologetic upon the assumption that it is only in religious matters that man has to be dependent upon God's revelation in order to arrive at truth. Whereas in the more so-called secular areas, man is able to arrive at true knowledge by using his reason independently of God. Man's mind is fully able to do one, but not the other. And so the apologetic method grants autonomy to man's reasoning in some areas. You're quite able to do it. And the conclusions you arrive at will be good and correct and sound. Does the unbeliever have a bias? Indeed he does. It's not just a bias though. For the full reality is that the unbeliever is at war with God. Yet he still insists that he's able to be neutral in his evaluation of his and God's conflicting claims. Okay, is there a God? Well, I don't know. Let's sit down and just talk about it. And let's see if we can arrive at the possibility of God existing. And the Christian says, that's a good idea. Let's sit down. Let's talk about the possibility of God existing. And you just use your mind and we're just going to look at the facts. We're just going to point to stuff we can observe and we're going to discuss this very important topic. And everything you say, do you agree that there's a possibility that a creator made this? Well, yeah, I do. My mind leads me to accept that. Okay, that's good. You see, your mind is working well. So the unbeliever says, I can be impartial. As I compare these different opinions, my views and God's views. And I can do this by merely using my reason without prejudice. I'm not prejudiced at all. This is just purely an academic exercise we're doing here. I'm not prejudiced. And obviously, since I'm mature and reasonable, I can determine which ones are true and which aren't. And that's how I can arrive at it. And many Christian apologetic methods assume this to be the case, to be how the unbeliever can and usually does function in an unbiased way. They legitimize man's autonomous use of his reason, at least in some areas. And when it comes to the Trinity, you've got to put that reason aside now. You've got to bow to what the scriptures say. When it comes to the blood atonement and how that actually works you've got to put aside your human reasoning standard that I've said was acceptable up to this point, but now you've got to put that aside and you've got to go by faith. The absolute sovereignty of God and human autonomy are mutually exclusive. They cannot coexist because every fact is understood either in terms of God's sovereignty or human autonomy. Every fact, as I said earlier, is a God-created fact and thus can only be understood correctly by God's interpretation of that fact and by knowing each fact in the plan God has for it. The natural man says he's able to arrive at true knowledge about facts independently of God. True knowledge is possible without God being considered and without knowing God's purpose for the fact being considered. However, the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows his handiwork. Psalm 19:1. Every fact that every person is confronted with at every moment of their existence reveals God to them. Thus, to debate whether any fact reveals God or not is an act of suppressing the truth. You're sitting with him, well, let's see if there's a possibility that God exists. And everything around him is screaming, I am the creator of the universe. And you're agreeing with him and siding with him. Yeah, your perception that possibly God doesn't exist or that there is a God, maybe some other kind, and I'm going to agree with you and go along and say, well, that's good as far as it goes. Let's see if I can bring you further down the road. We're supporting him. We're giving him his gun that we've tried to take away from him. Why does the unbeliever not conclude that the heavens declare the glory of God? Because he's self-consciously suppressing the truth that he knows and that he hates. And that he refuses to acknowledge. So we come back to the unbeliever's often heard claim, namely that he is only using reason. And therefore his position is superior to those who rely upon faith. But this is a ruse. This is a little game he's playing. He's trying to be a magician at this stage. I'm only using reason. You'll see atheist billboards saying that. Come over to atheism. We rely on reason. And he's taking a dig at faith. And they're saying their position is superior, but this is a ruse. He's trying to deceive you. And it's vital to his whole system. You see, by separating faith and reason and claiming to only be using reason, he's trying to hide his actual faith commitment. He doesn't want you to pursue his faith commitment. He wants to keep you in the objective here. I don't want you to see what's going on down here. I don't want you to see my foundations. I want to keep your eyes on the objects, and we're going to debate about these objects ad infinitum. He wants to keep everything in the realm of reason and objective facts so as to keep his presuppositions out of the discussion. Why? Because he knows his presuppositions cannot support what he claims they support. There's a lot of self-deception going on here. This is when you strip it down to the bare bones. This is what's going on. This is what should give us confidence in any discussion we're having. His whole system, the whole worldview, rests upon his presuppositions, and therefore he's prepared to violently and vigorously defend those presuppositions as you zero in upon them. The unbeliever hates the truth. That's why he's an unbeliever. We mustn't be naive and think that as you assault his presuppositions with the truth, that he will welcome this. No, he's going to defend his most fundamental presuppositions in whatever way he can. He's already engaged in a major campaign of suppressing the truth, and that truth surrounds him everywhere. And so, short of God's work of regeneration in his heart, he will continue to suppress any truth that you bring to him in any way that suits his cause. There's no scruples here. He's already lying and denying what is inescapably obvious. So don't feel that he's suddenly going to roll over and cry uncle. It's only God's regeneration. But we want to be faithful to the truth that God has revealed as we present it to him. This is not a game of battleships that you're playing with him, where you call out the square and you say, okay, A4, and he says, hit or miss. We've played that game. But that's not the game we're playing here. Many times the unbeliever will defend his presuppositions by ignoring your question. I don't know if you've ever asked somebody that. I mean, you see it all the time. If you listen to Bonson debating against Gordon Stein or one of the other atheists, they refuse to answer his questions because they can't. For them to even attempt to answer the question shows that they are bankrupt. And so they ignore it and they go off on rabbit trails. When you're debating the unbeliever, it's like playing battleships with a guy who's cheating. You know, no, that miss. What do you mean miss? It's impossible that that could miss. I know, I've got this whole thing blacked out. That has to be a hit. No, miss. And so he's gonna be like, he's never going to let you know that you've hit his presupposition. He's never going to let you know that you've wounded him or struck him. He's going to keep this whole frontage and deception up. Faith and reason are inseparable. So when someone claims to only use reason, this is one of the presuppositions we have to show him, one of his presuppositions. He must be shown his faith commitment to it. Get him to admit that reason is his highest authority. What's your ultimate authority? Well, it's my mind. That's what it is. So we reason through it, we come to the conclusion, my mind confirms it, I check it out, even if I'm looking at this fact, checking with that professor, reading that book, but finally my mind is going to say, no, this is it, and I accept it. And so when my mind is satisfied, bam, that's the truth. So my mind is the ultimate authority. You say, great, thanks. Now, are you talking about your own personal reasoning, or are you talking about reasoning as a force that's out in the world, and we try and tap into reasoning? You know, so you get him to nail it down, no, it's my own mind. Or you might say, well, it's out there is reason. And we collectively as a body arrive at truth through reason. Okay, you can take that in any way you want as well, but I mean, I'm sure you can see the holes through that position. So do you want to ask the person, if you reason your way to this conclusion that reason is the highest authority, do you reason your way to this position? What are the steps? How do we arrive there? Whether it's your own personal reason or whether it's this universal reason. How did we arrive at the conclusion that reason is the highest authority? Did you reason your way there? Show me the steps. He's not going to be able to show you the steps. Because you can't get there by reasoning. You haven't reasoned through every possible scenario to prove that reason is the highest authority for everything, and therefore this is the final appeal for everything, for every question, for answering everything. You haven't done it. You haven't demonstrated it. So how did you arrive there? How can you be so confident that you're standing upon reason as your ultimate authority? Because he made reason his ultimate authority by faith. not by his reasoning process. He presupposed that reason could fulfill this task. Now, he doesn't have to agree with you once you point that out. He says, you've assumed that by faith. You're incapable of showing your steps to get there. You're incapable of defending that position reasonably. But there you stand, unmoving. This is a faith commitment. So you've demonstrated his faith commitment, but you still have to ask, well, whose reason is absolute? Is there one universal reason? Is there one universal conclusion? Where do we attain that? Is it you, personally? Is that what ultimate truth is? Or is it this consensus that somehow we arrive as an international body? And people use that. President Obama said, I believe he was, I don't know who he was speaking to, but he said, we're not a Christian nation. We're not a Buddhist nation. We're not a Muslim nation. We're a nation of people who are held together by common ideals and principles. You see, there it is. It's a reason. Together we arrive at this. Now, we know what he means when he says common ideals and principles. He means his ideals that he's going to enforce on everybody else. But what is the source of the common ideals and principles? Man's reason. And so they assume, they throw it out there as if, oh yeah, well, that makes sense. That's obvious. I mean, who could have even argued with that? So you remove the faith. Obama removes the faith. You see what he did? He removes the faith. We're not a Christian. We're not Buddhist. We're not Muslim. No of these religious stuff. Just the unity of our common ideals and principles. There's the reason. Man's intelligence, man's mind. How do you determine reality in this reasonable philosophy of life? What is real and what isn't real in this? How do you know that what we're doing now is not a dream? How do you know what's real? How do you know the dream's not a reality? And reality is the dream. Well, only what's reasonable is real. If I can't reasonably explain it to you, it can't be real. If I can't reasonably explain to you about God, it can't be real. But who's going to determine what is and isn't reasonable? Now, we could go on, but it's clear that these claims that reason is not a faith commitment and that reason can serve as our ultimate authority are both bogus. They just throw them out there and it's kind of just presumed because that's repeated over and over and people just don't challenge it. They assume that there, I've answered the question. A worldview has to be able to consistently account for and explain the world as we find it, as well as supply the necessary tools for the effective functioning of society. How do we function? Ethics. How do we apply that? What is expected? What's responsibilities? How do we define those? Every worldview rests upon presuppositions. They all have to start somewhere. And so everyone chooses a starting place and then seeks to understand and function in the world in terms of those presuppositions. Everyone has a faith commitment to their presuppositions. And this ultimate faith commitment reveals their ultimate authority. It reveals the ultimate authority in their worldview. The Christian's ultimate presupposition, his ultimate faith commitment, and his ultimate authority is God, who has told us in his word who he is. Every ultimate authority proves itself by itself, not by some other authority. By necessity, the only way to prove the ultimate authority is by circular reasoning. Don't be afraid of circular. Somebody's going to accuse you of circular reasoning and say, yeah, you're right. But your ultimate authority is proved as well by circular reasoning. Because as soon as you change my ultimate... How do you know that's ultimate authority? Oh, because Ben told me. Okay, so Ben's the ultimate authority. Well, how do we know Ben's the ultimate authority? Oh, well, Sal told you. You know, you can't have this infinite regress. Ultimately, the ultimate authority is its own highest authority, and so it proves itself. And so everybody's highest authority, ultimate authority, proves himself. Reasoning. How do I know reason is the ultimate authority? Well, because I reason my way there. Okay, so it's a circular. So, okay, now we're both doing circular reasoning. Now we're going to test your ultimate authority to see if it can stand up to the test of supplying what you say it can supply to serve you in this capacity. And you can do the same to my ultimate authority. And we can see which one is able to stand up to the test. So don't be fazed by someone accusing you of circular reasoning. Just show them that they do exactly the same thing and then critique their professed ultimate authority to see if it can explain and account for life as we experience it in this world, and if they consistently live in terms of that profession. So that is kind of trying to just put in a nutshell, it gives you an angled approach, which I think can be applied, those simple principles can be applied to anybody, whether he's coming from the evolutionist perspective or he's coming from even a cult. You want to get in there, you're going to realize he's at war with God. I'm going to come in here, I want to find out his faith commitment, his ultimate authority, and then I'm going to critique his ultimate authority in terms of what he's professing it can do, in terms of explaining life as we find it. And that's not necessarily going to convert him. You're going to obviously share the gospel with him when you're speaking about your position. You're going to share Christ. You're going to explain what God has done, why he has done it, and what that gives you. And you can then show from your foundation why you have answers to every aspect of life and why you can define justice and things like that. So all the time realizing it's only God who can open his eyes. And many times apologetics doesn't necessarily bring a person to repentance, but it does often shut their mouth of spewing out their foolish ideas or thinking that they've got a quick answer to the Christian faith. Are there any comments or questions or additions?
I think one thing I would ask you, maybe if you could address,
something.